Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports update.
Forward Marcus Johansson signed a two-year, $9 million contract with the Sabres on Saturday. Johansson had 11 points in 22 Stanley Cup playoff games to help the Bruins advance to the Stanley Cup final. Sebastian Aho had his five-year, $42.27 million offer sheet matched by the Hurricanes on Sunday. Aho was a restricted free agent and was tendered an offer sheet by the Canadiens on July 1st. By matching it, Carolina has Aho under contract but will not be able to trade him for 1 year. Aho led the Hurricanes with an NHL career-high 83 points in 82 regular season games last season. The United States women's soccer team won its fourth World Cup and second in a row in a 2-0 victory over the Netherlands yesterday. Megan Rapinoe scored in the 61st minute when she converted a tie-breaking penalty kick. The U.S. set records with 26 goals and a 12-game World Cup winning streak dating back to 2015. Coach Jill Ellis became the first coach to lead a team to two Women's World Cup titles, and the United States joined Germany as the only repeat champions. As the 2019 Wimbledon Championship continues today, 15-year-old Coco Gauff's unexpected but remarkable run has ended with a loss to former number one Simona Halep, 6-3, 6-3 in the fourth round today. Gauff became the youngest player to ever qualify for Wimbledon's main draw in the professional era. That is your sports update. Steve Tasker along with Tyler Dunn here at One Bills Drive. Speaking to you till 3 o'clock, we're on One Bills Live taking your calls about whether or not the Buffalo Bills are set up for long-term success. We got a lot of feedback on this, and I promised you before the break that we would take a call from Bob in Las Vegas. I'm going to try and do that right now. Oh, gosh, this is dark. Here we go. Bob, you're on with Tyler Dunn, Steve Tasker here in Buffalo on One Bills Live. What's on your mind?
Hey, how you guys doing today?
We're doing great.
Great. Hey, listen, I've been a Bills fan since the inception and even before there with the AFL. I got a question. New Era Field, it was opened in 1973. It was renovated once since then. Is it more feasible or likely or unlikely to build a new stadium or renovate it again?
Well, first of all, Bob, I got to correct you. I don't want to get crazy, but it's been renovated way more than once. They've had upgrades periodically over the years that have upgraded it, and there was certainly an enormous one that was done just a handful of years ago where the super gates were put in, the wider concourses were put in, and that was after years before that they put in the dugout suites, and that was after years before that they put in the luxury suites around both ends of both end zones. Then that was before that or after that or at the same time maybe they put in the M&T Bank things and the end things. So there's been a number of renovations over the years. It hasn't just been one. They've done it year after year. I remember in 1990, after the Bills went to their first Super Bowl, the then owner, Ralph C. Wilson Jr., said, listen, the lease is up in 1999. We're not going to be able to drop a $500 million nut on the taxpayers of this region. If we're going to do this, it's going to take a collaborative effort between us and the taxpayers to make this stadium compatible or put it in a competitive way with the rest of the league. So we better start now. So 10 years in advance of the lease being up, they started upgrading. That's where the dugout suites came at the end of that upgrade process and that big run down to the 11th hour when they sold all the suites, the way the deadline that Ralph set up, it was met. And now it sits really actually in pretty good shape.
Well, do you think it's likely they would build a new stadium?
I think it's a possibility. I don't know, likely or unlikely. Man, I don't know. I think there's a great deal of research going on right now, and I don't think anybody knows the results of it yet. So I think everything's on the table. New stadium, old stadium, new stadium where the old one sits, new stadium downtown, different stadium where the new one sits, you know, where the old one sits, a different kind of stadium. All of that stuff seems to be on the table. And there's been a lot of speculation about what could happen and what would happen and how much affection there is for the present location of the stadium with all the tailgating room and the tradition of it and the institutionalization of that particular location or this particular location here in Orchard Park. It's got a lot going for it now after all these years.
Yeah, well, there's not much room uptown, is there?
Well, believe me, Bob, if they move this stadium, they'll make room for it wherever it is. I mean, you know, you got to know that they're going to have a spot for it. But you're right. There is a lot of questions to be answered if they're going to move the stadium.
Hmm.
All right. Hey, thanks for your call, Bob. Appreciate it. What are your thoughts on that, Tyler? I mean, you grew up here too. You've seen it. I mean, this is more than just a stadium. I mean, it's a generational mecca where Bills fans come to be, and the tailgating and the atmosphere in and around Orchard Park is a big part of it.
Man, I mean, you just hit all the right notes there, Steve. I just got to get a kick out of the commissioner really putting the heat on the team. It seems that every opportunity, I mean, he's talking about it at Jim Kelly's golf outing on that the Bills, quote unquote, need to stay competitive. That's the word. Last I checked, the Bills aren't playing on rubble and rocks and on blacktop. I mean, that's just the push from all the owners, right? Everybody, the revenue stream will go higher, obviously, if you have more luxury boxes. That's what every team wants. But it's unique here, as everybody knows, in Buffalo, New York. I think that probably the Bills are going to look to, another small market team we've talked about here in the Green Bay Packers. And they put in, a $295 million renovation project early 2000s. And that's a lot of money to ask, out of taxpayers. I think the vote was pretty close. It might have been, 53-47 yes. So that's pretty close
here
for
in
us
Buffalo.
In Green Bay.
In Green Bay,
For that renovation project. But I think something like that, this is just me talking. It makes a lot of sense to, they preserve the bowl. They built above the bowl. I mean, you still have the aluminum seatings there that you had back in the 60s and 70s. I don't think the Bills want that. But there's a way to – I mean, look, it's a year-round destination. They have restaurants there. They have a Packers Hall of Fame there. They play off the history and tradition in so many ways, and they're able to stay in Green Bay long-term. There has to be some kind of middle ground solution here that works for everybody, and maybe that money comes from a host of sources. It's going to be interesting.
I'll say this. I mean, it has been done around the league, particularly you look at New England. They built their stadium from scratch, but they bought the steel 10 years before they broke ground on it.
Yeah.
So they had that laying around, and it saved them hundreds of millions of dollars. And now that stadium is a nice stadium. It's built well, but it's not an enclosed dome, posh kind of atmosphere. Now, certainly the concourses are wide and they've got everything they need, but it's not the thing that makes that go is the area around that stadium where they've developed hotels, restaurants, shopping. It's a destination in and of itself. And you look at, and also it was all done, all of it was done with private money.
Yeah.
That's unique and unusual in the NFL. And I'll say this, as a result of that, you're paying $100 to park. $100. And that's not rinkside either. That's not right outside the wall. That is, a half mile away. It's a long way away before you get down into the $75 range and then the $50 range further out. I mean, it's a lot of money, but it's only paid for by the people who are using the facility. Right. Joe Blow, who doesn't go to the games, doesn't have to shell out that kind of money. But it's a big burden on the people who actually have season tickets and who actually want to go and tailgate and do all of that. But that was one of the things they did. They did it with private money, and the private people are the ones making the money.
The Buffalo Bills, it's tailgating. It's being out there when it's negative 20 and, getting a fire pit going and, maybe less people, smashing through tables here and there. But it is about the atmosphere, the experience, and I feel that there could be a solution where they are now to be, quote-unquote, competitive, as Roger Goodell, seems to say a lot.
You're with Steve Tasker and Tyler Dunn on One Bills Live. We're taking your calls about whether or not the Bills are set up well enough for long-term success. We're taking your calls as well. If you want to get in on the conversation, call us at 803-0550 or 1-888-550-2550 from out of Buffalo, or you can tweet at us at One Bills Live. We're also taking your calls, and we've got Ken on the line. Ken is from here locally in Elma. Ken, you're on the phone with One Bills Live, Steve Tasker, Tyler Dunn. What's on your mind?
Hi, I want to talk about free agency for a while. I moved here from Philly about 9 years ago, so I've been a Philly fan since Jaworski time.
Sure.
And there's always, you didn't have that much money, so you signed 3, 4, 5 free agents. And if you signed a linebacker free agent, he was almost pretty guaranteed to play on the team sometime that year. So the Bills have been my backup team because my wife's from here.
Right, okay.
My question is, they signed 19 guys. What kind of guarantees do these guys have? What kind of... These 19 guys, if they don't make it, they're out of a job and have no, they don't get anything for sure? Or is this, I know the offensive line was a mess, but like T.J. Yeldon, what's his incentive to sign here, and what's going to happen to him?
That's an interesting question. I mean, the incentive to sign here is the same incentive that every player has going around. It's whatever that team offers, either monetarily or the opportunity to play or the probability of playing. What he was told beforehand, what the team says, and really the only guarantee, you're talking about guarantees, I thought you were talking about for fans watching these guys play. You're talking about for the players themselves, what guarantees are there. There's never any guarantees, ever, unless you got it in your contract. And some of these guys sign long-term deals. You've heard about free agency, and that's the thing we were talking before the show about. You know, the big thing now is guaranteed money. I get it. Le'Veon Bell held out for it. Antonio Brown wanted it. Aaron Rodgers wanted it. All these quarterbacks wanted it. And that's a big thing about how much of this money, how much of the contracts are guaranteed for these guys when they sign. That's the only guarantees there are, Ken. I mean, there are no other guarantees. I don't, and that's never been any different from my era till the current one right now. So that's it. The player knows. And the only thing that's enticing the players to come here is what they are sold when they come here is on a visit. What they see with their own two eyes and what they're told by the people involved.
I mean, like T.J. Yeldon has been here. He's you know, in training camp and stuff. So he's been playing for 3 or 4 years. He signed a contract here for X amount of dollars. But if they cut him, he's out, right?
That's right. That's right.
Okay. 19 guys. Wow. Okay.
So you think some of these 19 guys don't have a chance?
Well, offensive line, there's... You can only carry 9, 10, 11. They're not – you got a lot of –
No, they're only going to carry, like, at most 9, and they have, like, 13 guys on the roster. So you're talking about 4 or 5 guys, yeah.
That aren't going to make it.
That are not going to make it, yeah. And some of them will probably have some credentials. But that's what guys are looking at all around the league. You're right. You're right. If you look at the numbers and you look at where they are and where they've been – some of these guys are not going to make a team who had a bad offensive line last year but who has taken great steps toward improving it. It's a tougher team to make this year than it's been in a number of years. So thanks for the call, Ken.
Good problem to have, right, when you've got to make those decisions if you're the Bills. And this kind of gets to maybe the heart of the next, you know, CBA negotiation, right? Guaranteed contracts. These players see what all these NBA free agents are making these past couple weeks, and heck, they want the guaranteed money, and this is a good question for you, Steve. I mean, say there is more guaranteed money in that next deal. Say that somehow the players get that. Is that when you see maybe players, you know, tapping out with a sore ankle, or there could be a phantom injury
exactly
here? I'm sure
right.
That's the leverage these teams want to have is the money's not guaranteed. We need you to play Sunday. Football's a little bit more physical, a little bit more violent than basketball, baseball. I mean, that's probably why teams don't want guaranteed money there. It has to be a big reason.
Yeah, there's no question about it. The physical toll that football takes is a bigger risk for players than the NBA. And conversely, it's a bigger risk for the employers, the teams.
Right.
They may lose this guy. The Cincinnati Bengals just lost their first pick of the draft because of a shoulder injury. He's not going to play this year, period. Done. Gone. Well, you're going to guarantee that money? You know, What if it's a free agent you just signed? What if T.J. Yeldon or whatever, you know, Marcell Dareus, you know, goes down with an Achilles? And now you're on the hook for $100 million for a guy that can't help you. And that's a ton of your salary cap. So I have always thought that it was the longest of shots for the CBA to ever include guaranteed salaries. I don't think it'll ever happen. I don't think the owners will ever go for that. They will have a lockout. They'll bring in scab players, replacement players again. They will not go down that road because it opens up all those guys you've seen sign big deals, and they take it out of gear. They don't play hard. They don't show up for work. They don't have to do it because the money's guaranteed, because the game commands so much emotional content. They just can't – they don't want to dredge it up anymore because they've got their pockets full and their life is easy. They don't want to go through that discomfort.
Do you think the players will just cede defeat there? Or is that going to be a point of contention?
It'll be a point of contention, I think. I don't know how far either side will take it. I know the owners will probably go down with the ship before they do that. I mean, they'll hold their noses and go under before they allow that to happen because it's just too big a risk for them. And the players, I think the best thing the players could hope for is say, we want it, we want it, we want it. Will you give us if we give it, let it go? And then we'll see where that goes.
See where that goes. The compromise,
And that seems more likely to me. All right. Tyler Dunn, Steve Tasker on One Bills Live. Are the Bills set up well enough for long-term success? On the tweet sheet brought to you by Corrigan's Moving System, the official movers of the Buffalo Bills, we've got this from Wendell. He says, I believe they are. The way the team has grown together from year one to year three is going to be on full display, and our team is going to turn the NFL on its ear. There's a more positive outlook from Wendell than we've heard from a lot of people around. From Jack, he says, I believe they're on their way. This year feels like 1988 to me. Young, talented quarterback, developing with a young roster and an excellent defense. I don't know if they'll win 12 games like 88, but I think they'll get overlooked by the NFL and surprise a lot of people. Set the future bright. Hashtag playoffs. Well, we'll see. I mean, that's it's a lot to ask, but he's right. There are some similarities. You've got a quarterback who showed some things, not a lot of great things. Didn't have a great supporting cast around him, Jim Kelly in 1987. Then in 1988, they draft Thurman Thomas, and all of a sudden things change a little bit. This year they draft an Ed Oliver. That changes things a little bit. Actually, maybe makes things even better than it did for that defense a year ago. We'll see. But there are some similarities to draw from 1988. Although going from 6 wins to 12 wins may be a lot to ask.
Yeah, I mean you know better than me. I think you hit it though with Thurman Thomas. I mean that definitely changed things very very quickly.
Team got pretty good when they got him.
And I'm not so sure Thurman Thomas is walking through that door right now. But they don't necessarily envision winning the way that those teams won. Maybe obviously Sean McDermott wants to win with defense. To draft Ed Oliver with your first pick instead of somebody on offense who could have helped an offense that needed a lot more help than your defense needed, that tells you a lot about the identity of the team and what they envision.
Yeah, I don't know if that guy was there, though, offensively. I mean, receivers fell way down, and they were drafted sporadically throughout the second half of the first round. I mean, there was no, the flavor of the draft, DK Metcalf. I mean, he didn't, everybody's thinking, man, he could be a top 10.
Right.
That never
last
happened.
Pick
I mean,
the second
people
round.
Knew, right? So that position was not as deep in this draft, wasn't as quality in this draft. And I think the Bills, true to what they have shown under this regime, have stayed in the line. They've taken the best guy available. They got themselves to a point for this draft that they weren't in, as Sean McDermott says, a positional emergency where they had to take a guy at this position because they had nobody else. They weren't there. And that allowed them to take an Ed Oliver at the spot when they did. Now, theoretically and maybe fortuitously, Ed Oliver's at the exact same position and the right guy at the right time when they lost a key player in Kyle Williams. And that was a little bit serendipitous, no question about it. But nevertheless, Ed Oliver was projected at a top five pick, a top three pick. He was a great, really talented player at the right position. So the Bills, by staying disciplined, got a chance to date a guy like that. And whether it's lucky or not, at least they were smart enough not to mess it up.
Right, that's huge.
Given the past history of this team back in a decade ago, man, it's saying something.
You know, and you could tell that he was targeted, that great behind-the-scenes video, on the Bills team website. A lot of fist pumps, from Brandon Bean to Joe Shane, Dan Morgan, this whole front office. The second the Lions didn't take Ed Oliver, you knew the Bills wanted Ed Oliver, which tells you a lot as well. I mean, I guess to play devil's advocate, maybe that pick could have been dangled. Maybe there was a team out there that loved Ed Oliver even more, and you're able to get, I don't know, an extra second or something to move down and build your offense with a couple of guys that maybe contribute right away. But I'll say this. I mean, they love Singletary, and they probably would have taken him a lot higher than they did if they had to.
Well, there you go. And that's one thing, too, that you get into a position where you can take a guy where you're picking instead of trading up to get him and giving somebody else up. And you know, the draft picks are gold these days. And I think the Bills they did it right. I mean, I like the way their draft unfolded. I like the guys they got at the top, and we'll see if it all pans out. There's always that question, but we'll see. We're asking our Bills fans, are the Bills set up well for long-term success? You can call us at 803-0550 or 1-888-550-2550. Let's talk to Zaire in Buffalo. Zaire, you're talking about Josh Allen and Tremaine Edmonds. And how they affect what this team has done to get ready to be successful long-term. What are your thoughts?
Yes, I believe that we are set up long-term for the future simply because we drafted those two guys at the same exact draft. If you think about it, we have two young leaders that control the offense and the defensive side of the ball, and we have them at young ages. Tremaine Edmonds was only, 20 when he came into the league?
And he was 19 when he was drafted.
19, so yeah, he's 20 now. So
now he's 21. He turned 20 right after the draft, like a week or two after the draft. I think in early May, I think he turns is his birthday. So this year he turned 21 after just turning 20 after he was drafted. Go ahead, Zaire.
Yeah, so like coming up watching the Bills, I can't remember a time where we've had the centerpiece of the offense and defensive side of the ball at the same time, and they're both at almost the same age, which is very young, but have time to grow into those leaders, and as the parts get better around them, the team will only get better because we have those two head honchos in place.
Yeah, I agree with you, and it's a great point, Zaire. I appreciate the call, and not only that, I think one thing, Josh Allen is going to be the only one of these quarterbacks drafted that is going to have his coaching staff intact from one year to the next in the same system. Now Baker Mayfield will probably be in the same system, but this is going to be Freddie Kitchens taking over for an offense where last year it was Todd Haley and his offense coming in, and now it's Freddie Kitchens, who was elevated from quarterbacks coach to offensive coordinator, then to head coach, and now he's been retained as head coach, and he's got an entirely new team and an entirely new job. So you take that into account, along with what happened in Miami, a total new staff, head coach, and in New York with the Jets. So what happened with Sam Darnold? He's got a whole new offense, whole new head coach, whole new system. So, you know, Josh Allen, Deshaun Watson in Baltimore gets to stay in the same coaching staff.
Yeah, Houston. Right? Yep. And Lamar Jackson.
Lamar Jackson stays the same thing in right. Baltimore. So Josh Allen is one of two guys from that draft class in the first round who gets to keep everything intact going from one year to the next. I think that's a help. And I think Zaire brought it into focus that you get these guys young enough and you get some stability around them and then kind of upgrade what's around them, you have every reason to think you're going to get improvement.
I mean, it sounds cliche, but, I mean, continuity matters, doesn't it? I mean, look at Alex Smith's career. How many different offensive coordinators did he have his first, six, seven?
He had, one every year.
Yeah, a different one every year. And then once he got a little stability, once Jim Harbaugh got in there, I mean, he was a Pro Bowl quarterback, you know, an all-pro quarterback almost. So it matters. You just want to have the right continuity, right? You don't want to have the wrong coaches and the wrong GM and the wrong quarterback sticking around through 5 and 6 win seasons. But, there are promising early signs that suggest that maybe this is the start of something big. Yeah. And I think with Edmonds, I mean, you're talking about a young – what is he now, 20 years old?
21, just turned 21 a month and a half
ago. Oh, my gosh, 6'5", 253. He ran a 4.5. He's got all the numbers you could ever look for. He's going to have a bigger impact than, you know, Preston Brown, who – solid starter, you know, there's a reason he was around as long as he was, but they clearly wanted an impact player in the middle of their defense, and maybe they found him.
And they got it, and they are building around these guys. They're young, they showed some things, and now certainly they've got a ways to go, as you would expect, but they were rookies who certainly didn't disappoint a year ago, showed a lot of intrigue and a lot of promise, and I think the Bills are right to give them another year and to hitch their wagon to these two guys. They've done a lot of great things. They're hardworking guys. The players rallied around them, and they tended to improve week after week after week. So we'll see how that goes. Tyler Dunn, Steve Tasker on One Bills Live. We're here till 3 o'clock, right after the bottom of the hour. We're going to take your call from Carl and Clarence. We'll get back to you about whether the Bills are set up for long-term success. You're listening to One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Call from Mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back to One Bills Live. Steve Tasker and Tyler Dunn in. Murph is on vacation this week. Chris Brown will be in co-hosting tomorrow. We've been talking today about whether or not Bills fans think the team, Bills, are set up well enough for long-term success. Certainly there's some question marks going around, but for the most part, I think Bills fans like what they've seen of what the team has done this offseason and over the last two or three years of the McDermott and Bean rain or regime, I guess you call it.
Yeah, a regime that could turn into a rain, they hope, right?
Yeah, exactly, right.
Yeah, I just think they've made smart decisions, like you were hitting on earlier. Not a lot of bad money thrown around. They were patient with how they went about the quarterback position, and they targeted who they wanted to target. So year three in any regime, it's time to win. I mean, you see it around the league. Look in San Francisco. Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch, they know it's time to win there. You get to that third year. The time for culture changing and rebuilding and all those buzzwords, process. I don't know if fans want to hear those words now. They want to see wins, and they want to see playoff wins.
That's exactly right. And on the tweet sheet, are the Bills set up well enough for long-term success? From Swice is nice. Missed you guys. The Bills are absolutely set up for both short-term and long-term success. 17 and 49, that means Josh Allen and Tremaine Edmonds, by themselves are prime examples of the necessary building blocks. Coach and GM are working as one. Top-notch facilities and an established culture will continue to bring the right guys in. Also from Brian on the tweet sheet, look out, I'm pouring Kool-Aid. We are well-positioned. The two most impactful pickups are the coaches and GM. Far more optimistic than the last two decades. It's like we've planted a garden, it's budding all over, and it's only a matter of time until it blossoms, hopefully early to mid-season. That's been kind of the tone of everything. And we've said it all along. Murph and I have made the point from early in the offseason. It's hard to imagine a more optimistic 6-10 franchise than the Buffalo Bills are headed into this offseason and now into training camp.
Yeah, there's a lot of optimism. You know what's funny, though, this time of year, that this sweet spot in the calendar right before training camp, I think this conversation is probably being had around the NFL. I mean, there's a lot of optimism everywhere you look. I mean, look in the division with the New York Jets. Now, I know they had all kinds of drama there with the GM leaving and Adam Gase's, you know, control for more power, the power grab there, whatever you want to call it. But there's some reason for optimism there, too. Absolutely. I mean, they've got a quarterback in Sam Darnold they think they can build around. And, oh, by the way, maybe they just added the best player in all of football. Le'Veon Bell is somebody you can line up all over the field. I know we didn't play last year, but maybe that's not necessarily a bad thing as a running back to not take those hits for a full year. If he's in shape, they might have the best player, you know, in the division when you're not looking at the quarterback position. This is somebody that could change that team in so many different ways.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll take one last call for this show. Carl's been waiting for quite some time. Carl from Clarence, you're on the air with Tyler Dunn and Steve Tasker on One Bills Live. What's on your mind?
Hey, guys, how's it going? Great show as always. Is John on vacation or is he playing hooky? Because I know Fort Erie Racetrack's open.
It might be both. I mean, I don't know. Is vacation not count as hooky? But, yeah, he's on vacation.
Yeah, he loves his horses. Anyways, as I was telling the call taker that, you know, everything being fairly equal, relative, we don't talk enough about all competition. I think it's like, I can count the elite teams in the league on one hand. The other 25, I think, were all pretty much equal. And I think there's like 10 that totally suck, and we should beat 4 out of 5 times. So I'm encouraged. I think if we can hold the opponents to 20 this season, I think we're going to get a lot of wins. And when we don't hold them to 20, I think we may lose, but I think we will be putting on average at least 21 on board for a game.
I appreciate it, Carl. Thanks. That's a nice take. It's interesting, too, that, yeah, you're right. I mean, the 20 is kind of the magic number for defenses around the NFL. If you can hold them to 20, you feel like you got a chance to win offensively, even with an average or even below average offense. If you can get, and if you can win any other, you know, like with an explosive play or with a turnover, you're going to win more games than you lose if you can do that. And that's because games in the NFL are tending to be more and more high scoring.
They are, and that's what the league wants. I mean, look at the rule changes just this offseason. I should say changes to instant replay. I mean, now you're going to be able to look at a coverage on the island there with a cornerback and a receiver in slow motion and dissect that in slow motion. I mean, it's kind of insane if you ask me, if you ask a lot of NFL cornerbacks. So I think that's maybe where Buffalo does have an advantage, when you have a coach in Sean McDermott who knows that position as well as any coach in the NFL and can adjust to these changes in the rules, where now, you know, you can review something like that. It's an offensive league, don't get me wrong. They're going to have to score. If they want to win it all, they're going to have to, you know, go drive for drive with Tom Brady, which I don't know if they're there yet, but at least they have something in place. At least they have an identity, a direction, and you know, we know where the league's heading, and at least they have a coach who can somehow go with those absurd changes.
That's right. All right, it's time now. Thank you, Tyler, for that, and I agree with you. But it's time now for NFL True False, brought to you by Yancey's Fancy, New York's Artisan Cheese. I'm going to be pumped. We're going to go with number one. The first NFL True False, the number one, the 2013 Seahawks are the top team of this decade. It's True False. I think I'll go first, and I'm going to say yes. You can tell me what you want. Here's why I think that. They won the Super Bowl, no question about it, and that's a given. But here's the reason I think they're one of the best teams of this decade, maybe even greater. I think they put on the best defensive performance of any team in any Super Bowl, bar none, even better than the 85 Bears, better than any other defense you can name because of this. The offense they faced in the Denver Broncos in Super Bowl, I believe it was 48, was the record-setting offense of the decade. They were absolutely a juggernaut. Peyton Manning was still throwing the football extremely well. They had Wes Welker. They had all of these great games in Denver with this offense. It was an absolute juggernaut in Denver offensively, and the Seattle Seahawks crushed that team in the Super Bowl. It was no contest. And I think that gives the Seahawks, in my opinion, the nod as the greatest team of that decade because of the winning that they have done and the performance they put together. That team, I don't know if there's been a team in this decade that would have beaten that team.
They just bludgeoned them that night in New York, didn't they? I mean, Denver was averaging 38 points a game that season. Peyton Manning was playing out of his mind, setting records all over the place. And, I mean, they made him look like a JV offense. It was unbelievable. Yeah. I don't know. I'm going to go false. I'm going to say the 2016 Patriots just right. It's hard to disagree with you there, but I mean, you're talking about Tom Brady's revenge tour when he started missing the four games, still throws for 28 touchdowns, two picks. Gronk missed half the year. I mean, they blasted the Texans, the Steelers in the playoffs, and I think a team that gets out of a 28-3 hole to win it all. I mean, that alone kind of makes you the best team of the decade.
And you think, too, that was the game they came back from 28-3 down and won that Super Bowl. Yeah, no question, 14-2 is a real feat for that team. I think they were 12-1 with Brady, or 11-1 with Brady as their quarterback in the regular season when he came back after that. Okay, NFL true false number two. Nick Foles will help get the Jaguars back to the playoffs in 2019. You can go first, Tyler.
I'm going to say true. I mean, I think Jacksonville's defense is still a top five defense that, you know, look, they did not have much support at all from their offense, even when they were one of the best defenses in the NFL a couple years ago. To replace Blake Bortles with Nick Foles, that's night and day. Foles just has this effect, I think, that every team seeks out of that position. He really does make everybody around him better. He injects a belief. I can still remember being out there in Philly during their bye week when everybody was counting this team out, when Carson Wentz was done with that torn ACL. I mean, to a man, from Lane Johnson on the offensive line to, you know, Alshon Jeffrey, Torrey Smith, everybody in that locker room in that moment believed that Nick Foles was going to bring them to the Super Bowl and win it. That's exactly what he did. Don't call him a system quarterback. I mean, you're talking about the same Patriots defense that, you know, took it to Sean McVay and Jared Goff. They didn't score a touchdown in that last Super Bowl. For Nick Foles to do what he did in the Super Bowl before that, Super Bowl MVP, I think that he takes Jacksonville, maybe not over the hump, to the Super Bowl, but he makes them a playoff team, no doubt.
I think it's false. I think the window's slammed shut for the Jaguars. I think that Doug Marrone and their program are deteriorating as we watch. I thought they did hit a high note at the end of the 2017 season, but last year they took a step back. Where they had a 7-game losing streak last year. I think they're done. I think Nick Foles is going to help them. Certainly they may play more consistently offensively, but their defense is not what it was 2 years ago, and I think that trend is going to continue. So I'm going to say Nick Foles, as good as he has been, is going to improve them, but I do not think he's going to put that team in the playoffs. I think their window's shut too quickly, and it's over. So I'm going to say false. Okay, last one. NFL true false number 3. J.J. Watt was the best selection from the 2011 draft. True or false? I guess I can go first on this one. You got to remember back, that was Cam Newton went number 1. Von Miller went number 2. A.J. Green went number 4. Patrick Peterson went to the Arizona Cardinals. Tyron Smith to the Dallas Cowboys as a left tackle. And then J.J. Watt was number 11, and they're saying he was the best player. Now, he's a 3-time defensive MVP. Pretty good. But you got a couple of guys up there that are pretty good too, Cam Newton and Von Miller, respectively. What do you think, true or false?
I mean, yeah, 3-time defensive player of the year. Got robbed of an MVP, you know, just a few years back. I'm going to say false. I think J.J. Watt can do a lot, and it's hard to say false to this, but – man, I mean, I think Julio Jones, when it's all said and done, is going to finish as a Hall of Famer in his own right. And he took Atlanta to a Super Bowl. He had really what should have been the signature play in that Super Bowl, that catch that we all thought sealed the win for Atlanta. J.J. Watt, unbelievable talent, but hasn't equated to, you know, playoff wins, hasn't equated the Super Bowl appearances. I think there's not going to be another Julio Jones for quite some time.
I'll say false as well. I think JJ is a great player, no question about it. But his susceptibility to injury has hindered his legacy. I think that other players, Von Miller in particular, is on a collision course with the Hall of Fame as well. And I think Cam Newton was an MVP of the NFL and got his team to the Super Bowl. JJ is not. Cam Newton has been the difference maker for an entire franchise for almost, well, for what has been his entire career. J.J. has had 3 years where he was the defensive MVP, and he is a great player. But I think as a franchise changer, I think Cam Newton gets the nod. And I think you can put Von Miller right there with J.J. Watt as far as effectiveness and his ability to wreck a game. So I'm going to say false to that as well. So that is NFL True False, brought to you by Yancey's Fancy, New York's Artisan Cheese. We're going to hang in at – I don't know. What do you think about – is J.J. Watt a Hall of Famer?
Oh, absolutely. He's got to be, right?
After 8 years?
I think so. I think we haven't seen –
I mean, missed a significant amount of time to injury. Missed a 3-time lot. Defensive MVP, though.
3-time defensive player, right? Of the year. I mean, really should have been the MVP of the entire league in 2014. I mean, what he was doing – affecting games in every possible way. I mean, forced fumbles, interceptions, batted balls, catching touchdowns. I don't know how much he has left at his peak. I think these injuries are starting to add up a little bit, yeah, for J.J. Watt. I think one thing we can agree on, Steve, it's not Marcell Dareus, right? I mean, he's probably not the best player.
J.J. Watt's motor did not get put into idle when he signed the $100 million.
It did not.
J.J. Watt continued to keep his foot on the gas, and I think you got to tip your hat to him, if only for that, even though it is – I mean, it's the right thing to do. If they're paying you that kind of money, you should give a full effort. Some guys we've seen don't. They just don't. They seem to become a different guy. And it is a human nature thing, no question about it. But something you should take, I don't know, at some level you got to take some pride in what you do and why you do it. And if it's for the money, ultimately you're not going to be as good as you can be. J.J. Watt is motivated by something else. You can say whatever. I don't know what it is, but he's still got his foot on the gas.
And talking about long-term success and building a structure that ensures long-term success, I mean, I think that has to be a big part of it for this Bills regime, right? It's your scouts, your personnel department, really seeing what makes these guys tick and not screwing up like that front office did in that draft. I mean, to not get an all-pro out of that draft, I mean, that set the Bills back. You're talking about Cam Newton, Von Miller, then Dareus, A.J. Green, Patrick Peterson, Julio Jones, and Tyron Smith down to the Cowboys at 9, J.J. Watt at 11. I mean, Robert Quinn, I think Richard Sherman was in this draft in, what, the 5th round? I mean, this is an all-time draft.
Yeah,
Cameron Jordan.
Absolutely. It was great. And that is, NFL True False brought to you by Yancey's Fancy, New York's Artisan Cheese. We're going to be back to finish up. We're going to be here till 3 o'clock. Tyler Dunn, Steve Tasker, One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to One Bills Live here. We're here till just the top of the hour here, a few more minutes. We had one thing we wanted to get to. We were talking about everything under the sun today, and we got sidetracked. Well, didn't get sidetracked. We actually didn't get sidetracked enough because we wanted to talk about this one play that happened in Major League Baseball. We've been talking about the Buffalo Bills and are they set up well enough for long-term success. Been talking to people all over the country about that, and most of the sentiment has been, of course they are. They got a young talent. They're building a culture, and they've done all the right things and stayed inside the lines. But now the pressure's on. You know, they got to win, right? So that's right. That's it. But now with this thing happened in Major League Baseball, I guess it happened yesterday. Jake Marisnick and John LaCroix had a collision at home plate. And for those in MSG, they're watching it. And Marisnick's coming around third base. There's a tag and run, and the Astros runner comes in and bowls over the catcher for the Angels, who is John LaCroix. Broke his nose, actually went out of his way. I mean, it's a pretty egregious hit, I thought. Some people are saying, no, the catcher was blocking the plate or whatever, but the runner went off the base path and went inside the base path and actually went at the catcher in order to try and score. He did score, but the catcher's nose was broken. And, I thought it was an egregious hit.
That's about, you know, as bad as it gets. And I'm no baseball expert, but doesn't it really look like he's going for the plate there, Steve?
He's not.
He's just headhunting.
He did. Now, he showed quick remorse for right away. I mean, he got up and went right to the guy and helped him and tried to console him and whatever and apologize. But he took the guy out. No question about it, and I think it's a suspendable offense myself. I think he can't do that. He went inside the line. He changed his path a couple of steps before the collision in order to make the collision happen. He didn't make any kind of attempt to avoid the catcher. The catcher was you can say he was on the line, off the line. It was the guy could have slid around him and been safe as well. Whatever. But he ran into the guy on purpose and took him out and busted his nose.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is, a late 90s, early 2000s, NFL safety, just head first, just ramming into a guy without trying to break up or make any play for the ball whatsoever. I would think he's suspended. I'd be shocked if he wasn't.
He should be. I don't know. I just think if you get a chance, go on Twitter or online and look at the collision. I agree with you. I think it was egregious. I'm not a big baseball fan. But that to me is a no-brainer from a guy who I'm pretty sure that the ball is stuffed, not blown up in baseball, but that's about all I know. I know there's not air in the baseball.
Yeah. I'm with you.
Yeah. Anyway, Tyler, thanks for coming in, man. It's been fun.
Hey,
appreciate it.
Pleasure was all here, man. It was a lot of fun.
I'm glad we'll have you back. I appreciate you taking time. I know you're as busy as anything with your work with Bleacher Report. I know you guys do good work over there. We had a chance to talk about your article of last spring of – when Aaron Rodgers and Mike McCarthy parted ways is well-researched, and I encourage everybody to go read it and read your stuff on Bleacher Report.
Yeah, thanks so much, Steve, man. It was a lot of fun. Appreciate that.
That's going to do it for us at One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. I'd like to thank production assistants George Blas, Jeff Koltenak, Thomas Hollander, Kelly Rude, J.J. Torito, Kevin Carges, and James Roble, and, of course, our producer, Jay Harris. Murph is out for the week. Chris Brown will be back with us tomorrow, and One Bills Live will be on from noon to 3. This has been One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. And this is Buffalo Bills Radio. Thanks, everybody.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.